I'm Michelle Martin, and this is Tell Me More from NPR News. It's time for our weekly visit to the barbershop, where the guys talk about what's in the news and what's on their minds. Sitting in the chairs for a shape-up this week, our freelance writer Jimmy Israel, civil rights attorney and editor Arsalan Iftikhar, syndicated columnist Ruben Navarrete, and writer and editor Brian Bennett. Welcome, everybody. I may jump in here or there, but for now, take it away, Jimmy, who happens to be right here with me in Washington.
Hey, thanks, Michelle. Hey, fellas, how we doing?
Hey, what's happening?
Oh, man. Sadness hovers over the nation today and this week, as you know, behind the shooting at the Holocaust Museum here in D.C. Now, guard Stephen Tyrone Johns was killed, and the 88-year-old gunman James Von Braun was wounded in an exchange and remains in critical condition. Of course, we here at the barbershop, like everybody, would like to extend our condolences to the family and friends of Stephen Tyrone Johns. His son, I saw him this morning on the news, just broke my heart. Ruben, your piece in CNN.com. What's up, man? The R. How you living?
What's up, baby? How you doing? You're lucky. You're sitting there next to the beautiful Michelle Martin. That's nice.
Man, hoo-wee. Shout out to Billy.
We wish we had a set. We wish we had happier circumstances to get together.
Yeah, absolutely.
I know it.
Listen, bro. Listen, you know, sumi hermana por otra madre, right? But, yo, I read your piece at CNN, and right. I think about you were talking about how we need stronger ways to deal with hate speech and hate crimes, but you know, I gotta say, mapping Reverend Wright to Von Braun, I mean, that's like a fail to me, bro. I mean, we have to draw a line between just the abuse of free speech and hating the raw, man. Come on, man, you gotta do better than that.
Here's the background on that. I mean, obviously, for those who are just tuning into the debate here, there's an unfortunate case of bad timing. Our friend Reverend Jeremiah Wright let loose with a really unfortunate and ugly comment this week about how, when asked, does he still talk to Barack Obama, he says, no, them Jews won't let him talk to me.
And I have
an obvious reference to...
Forgive me, Ruben. I have the clip. Yeah. It's very hard to understand, but I just want to, just in case anybody has any doubt that this actually was said, let me play a little bit of it,
sure.
And I just want to warn you that it is very hard to hear. Here it is.
Have you spoken with him since he's been in the
how
White House?
How come you let him talk to me? My baby daughter said he'll talk to me 5 years from now when he's lamed up, for 8 years when he's out of office.
Well,
he can't talk. Remember?
If you had anything to say to him, what would you say to him?
Same thing I've said to him all along. Don't let being in politics change who you are as a person.
As to this question of whether he'll talk to him 5 years from now, I very much doubt that.
But
that's in fact what he said. So I just want to let you know that you're reporting accurately.
Yeah, it was a dumb remark. It comes off ugly. Them Jews don't let him talk to me. I mean, he's referring to, obviously, some of Barack Obama's closest advisors in the White House who happen to be Jewish, some of his handlers, so to speak. And I think that, a lot of people in the media, I saw Wolf Blitzer in CNN did a segment on this, asked Donna Brazile her perspective. This was bad timing. This is not to say that there's a moral equivalency between the shooter at the museum and Reverend Jeremiah Wright, but we do see shades of anti-Semitism in both comments. I don't think there's any doubt that Reverend Jeremiah Wright is showing himself to be an anti-Semite. We already knew that, but now he's making it plain, and it's unfortunate. It's unfortunate because the president has said in his response to the museum shooting that we have to be vigilant. We have to be vigilant, and we have to watch out for this kind of stuff wherever it lurks, including apparently back home in Chicago.
Well, here's my question, Ruben, and I take your point. His comments were bigoted. I don't understand what other interpretation could there be. But my question is, in your original piece was about arguing for why we need to have enhanced penalties for hate crimes. That, to me, is like hospitalization, not inoculation. Hospitalization is expensive. Inoculation is not. And what I'd like to understand is, what would keep people from doing this? We cannot, you know, regulate speech. We're not going to throw people in jail for having opinions that are bigoted that we don't like. But I guess I wish we could spend more time thinking about it. I'd rather that the man hadn't been shot. I'd rather that the man had not walked in there and hurt the man. So giving the man adding 10 years to the sentence of an 88-year-old man doesn't do it for me. That's my question.
Yeah, I'd rather know that young boy would have his father growing
up
as opposed to the alternative. But you got to drop the hammer, though. There are folks out there who say, no, all crimes are motivated by hate. We shouldn't have hate crime legislation. We shouldn't have extra penalties. BS. You know, this is a crime that didn't just impact the people at that museum. It impacted the entire country. You know, the entire country was wounded by this, so there ought to be a heavier penalty.
Brian wrote about this, too.
Yeah, I wrote about the
The controversy over the DHS, the Homeland Security report from April 7th that basically talked about some of the possible homegrown threats that were coming up here in the United States, particularly surrounding right-wing causes.
And what motivated the report, by the way? Why did they generate the report?
The report was generated as a way to look at not just what our external threats are, but what our threats are inside the United States to national security and public safety, and it's trying to identify, okay, where could some of these attacks be coming from here inside the United States, like the Oklahoma bombing, for example, Oklahoma City bombing, and they were identifying and got very controversial. They were identifying some of the causes, potential causes for hate crimes. One was the radicalization in the pro-life movement, the anti-immigration movement. We saw the murder of George Tiller on May 31st that realized some of those fears. And the conservatives, talk show hosts, just jumped all over this report and successfully silenced the Department of Homeland Security. They pulled the report. Napolitano pulled back from it, said it should be rewritten and be more useful. But it was identifying some serious trends that exist in the United States. One of the things that touched a chord was identified the potential that returning veterans from Iraq and Afghanistan could be targeted by hate groups.
But they said returning – I think the report, and I read it, said returning veterans who are having trouble readjusting. It didn't say all returning veterans. It said returning veterans who are having difficulty readjusting could provide –
Right, not the targets.
So what's the status of that now? Or now they – is Homeland Security looking at it again, saying maybe there was something there?
Essentially, Homeland Security is – I mean, the advisors inside of Homeland Security feel like, hey, we were actually sounding the alarm on something that's going on here. And they sent the report back basically for scrubbing, for sort of political correctness. The idea of returning veterans is very controversial because, yeah, we're proud of these guys who went over there and fought. But just like any population, you're going to have people coming back who have mental problems who could fall off the deep end.
Arsalan, finally, you've written so much about hate crimes over the course of the years with it related to different groups. I know this has touched you very deeply because we talked about it.
Yeah, I mean, for me at least, as a civil rights lawyer, I want to get back to the human tragedy of this all. You know, someone who works for racial and religious tolerance amongst people of all colors and races and religions, as a Washingtonian, you know, this was an attack in our city, and I actually had a Facebook status update where I said that I think there should now be commissioned a bronze statue of Officer Stephen Tyrone Johns to sit adjacent to the Holocaust Museum to remind us that hatred knows no color. It still exists today, and this is something that we as Americans still have to address.
I think we often don't think about these men and women who stand guard at these public institutions. I remember a couple of years ago when the guards at the U.S. Capitol were killed.
I was inside the Capitol at the time it happened.
Who stand, but you know, at the ready to protect the rest of us. And I think it's well worth remembering. And thank you for that. But Jimmy, I know you wanted to talk about, so on a lighter note, but lighter, but not, you know, completely unserious. There's this kind of kerfuffle between David Letterman and Sarah Palin.
It's kind of problematic. You know, David Letterman and Governor Sarah Palin, they're kind of going at it in a war of words over jokes. Dude made about Bristol, you know, and before we got some tape on that, I bet, right?
Well, he says the joke was about Bristol, but the Alaska governor does not agree with that. Let's set the table. Late night talk show host David Letterman made Palin the target of his top 10 list. This was the joke that set it off. Here it is.
You know who was in town this weekend, went to a Yankee game? Sarah Palin,
That's
governor
right.
of Alaska.
Yeah.
Do you remember Sarah Palin?
Sure. Yes.
One awkward moment, though, during the game. Maybe you heard about it. Maybe you saw it on one of the highlight reels. One awkward moment for Sarah Palin at the Yankee game. During the seventh inning, her daughter was knocked up by Alex Rodriguez.
Okay.
And she was not pleased because the daughter who was at the game was not the daughter who has the
right.
child out of wedlock. It was the little one. It's the 14-year-old. And she was very
Ouch.
Upset. So she responded on John Ziegler's show. You want to hear that?
Yeah,
let's hear
ahead.
That. Here,
yeah.
There's what she said. She went on John Ziegler's radio show, conservative talk show host. Here it is.
For him to pick up on such a thing, a distortion that, again, is based on a slow news day, evidently, not having anything else to talk about. That's pretty pathetic, good old David Letterman.
And she went on to say in a written statement, and she's also been on the Today Show to talk about the fact that she feels that these are inciting sexually, it's sexually, laughter incited by sexually perverted comments made by a 62-year-old male celebrity aimed at a 14-year-old girl is not only disgusting, but it reminds us that some Hollywood New York entertainers have a long way to go in understanding what the rest of America understands, that acceptance of inappropriate sexual comments about an underage girl who could be anybody's daughter contributes to the atrociously high rate of sexual exploitation of minors by older men who use and abuse others. You know, I was feeling her until that Hollywood New York dig. I was feeling her until that day.
You know what? Oh. And Ruben, help me out here. And, you know, listen, mark today on your calendar because I am on Team Palin for this. Because guess what? You know, there's like in the last maybe 10 or 15 years, it's become really fashionable to take digs and to make kind of sexually inappropriate comments since Britney Spears, I guess, you know, about underage girls. And guess what? Or like, you know, girls are just too young. Now, everybody's somebody's kid, right? But if anybody gets at my daughter in the public sphere, I'm not going to go on the radio and get at them. I'm coming. What's up, Dave? I'm going to be at your pad. You know, and this is really serious. I mean, this is it's so disturbing that our little girls have become targets for late night TV. And, you know, she's a civilian. I said this about something else, you know, I forgot some time ago, but leave the civilians out of it.
Well, the only point, I'm not defending Leverton, but his only point is that he did not think he was talking about the 14-year-old. Yeah. He believed he was talking about the 18-year-old.
He shouldn't have talked about either daughter.
He didn't
both
think.
Daughters are civilians. Both daughters are civilians.
Go ahead, Ruben. I don't understand how somebody who makes $35 million a year like David Letterman and who has a whole team of writers working for him couldn't have seen this coming when he scripted a joke, you heard it yourself, talking about what happened specifically at that game, not knowing that the 14-year-old was the one at the game and not Bristol. I mean, you got to do better than that.
Sure.
For $35 million, so the writers should have caught that and seen that coming, and they didn't. And now this is not about Palin. This is not about thin-skinned politicians, and it's not about jokes. You know, as again, like Jimmy, as the father of a daughter, you got to walk it like you talk it. If we're going to be serious about not exploiting children, if we're going to be serious about getting on, we get all worked up about these people who come out with dolls that are over-sexualized, because, you know, the Bratz dolls and stuff.
How about Imus? I mean, how about Imus? You know, we talked about Imus and his comments about these basketball players.
Imus was a little different.
Why?
Liberals want to freak out
because
over that
we found
stuff,
that
but
offense.
They want to say this is okay.
It was offensive.
You know, that's not going to fly.
I'm not sure people are saying it's okay. I don't know. Brian, what did you want to...
I think Jimmy makes a good point, but this whole thing seems very mutually beneficial to me. I mean, Letterman this week is in a ratings contest with Conan O'Brien, who just started his new show in the same time slot, and he's trying to overtake The Tonight Show. And Sarah Palin is trying to position herself as a major player going forward in the Republican Party, and especially that line about Hollywood and New York. I mean, that speaks such a piece of red meat for her constituency. So, I mean, going on the Today Show and stuff. I mean, I think Jimmy's right. I think she's bringing up a good point about we shouldn't be talking about people's young daughters in this way, but.
I think you make an interesting point because to me it seems to me you don't have to. I can pay you money and tell you there are plenty of people in Hollywood and New York who found that offensive. And so why are you going out of your way to sort of set them up as some isolated island? I mean, Arsalan, you had something.
It was a bad joke. I mean, it was a lowbrow bad joke. As Letterman said during his apology, he's like, I have thousands of jokes that are just bad. And I think that, you know, it was just one of those lowbrow things. I think maybe something funnier would have been, you know, in his top 10 list if he said that, you know, while Sarah Palin was in New York, she was told that she was going to Vogue. And she was disappointed to find out that she wasn't going to Rogue magazine, you know?
Right.
Something like that. But it's, it was just a bad joke.
If you're just tuning in, you're listening to Tell Me More from NPR News. I'm speaking with journalists Jimmy Israel, Brian Bennett, Arsalan Iftikhar, and Ruben Navarrete in the barbershop. We only have a couple of minutes left, but we can't leave it without talking about the NBA finals.
Game four of the finals. The LA Lakers take down the Orlando Magic by 8 in overtime. Final score?
99-91.
Oh, man. And Dwight Howard just dumped 2 critical free throws.
Ouch.
You know what? As Rabbi Alyssa Stanton might say, oy vey, brother. You know, what happened, A-Train?
You know, for true NBA fans, it's always nice to see OG veteran NBA journeyman like Derek Fisher, number 2,
old man,
drop some clutch 3-point dimes.
Old
one
man
in
Fisher. He's younger than I am.
Old man Fisher.
That's what Maxine Waters called him.
One in regulation, one in overtime. And I do want to note that another hero from the game was 7-year-old Gina Marie Incandela, a local Orlando autistic girl who sings the Star Spangled Banner before Orlando games. They were undefeated every time she sang. They brought her last night. They're down 3-1. And my man Brian Bennett here, who is a Lakers fan.
Grew up a Lakers fan. I'm so happy they're up 3-1. and also Lakers are 6-0 after a loss right now in the playoffs. So, you know, I got a real good feeling about this. Although, you know, I'd be okay if it went to a couple extra games because I just love watching Stan Van Gundy march up and down the sidelines like a bulldog. That guy is good TV.
Well, and I do have to note that I am wearing my Beat LA t-shirt, so I'm rooting
for... You are? What is up with
yeah,
that?
Yeah, baby.
No matter who the Lakers are playing, I mean, they could be playing, you know, Dick Cheney, Wolfowitz, Rumsfeld,
they're not
Gandhi,
the Celtics.
Yeah, exactly.
and he has the nerve to have the bright green thing. It's like, I need sunglasses.
Pulling for the magic.
With the leprechaun.
We have to leave it there. There's this, if you have not seen it, this Congresswoman Corrine Brown and Maxine Waters wearing their respective team jerseys talking trash on YouTube. It is not to be missed. We'll have a link on our...
It's hilarious.
...on our website. I did think they were going to start... pushing each other. I don't know. I was a little concerned. Robert, we didn't get your pick for the final.
Pulling for the magic. Looking for the underdog on this. The Lakers and the new Yankees. Are you kidding me?
LA, take them. LA, take them.
Jimmy Israel is a freelance journalist who writes for TheRoot.com and TV One Online. He joined us from our studios in Washington, along with Brian Bennett, a contributing editor and blogger at TrueSlant.com, and Arsalan Iftikhar, the founder of TheMuslimGuy.com and a civil rights attorney. They were all here with me, the outlier, of course, Ruben Navarrete, who writes for the San Diego Union-Tribune and CNN.com. He was in San Diego.
Peace.
Thank you all so much.
Yep.
Peace.
Thank you.
All right.
We'll be right back.